The golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, an episode of My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning, The Planet Man Orbits the Moon, and Gold Fever on Tales of the Diamond K. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, The Planet Man Orbits the Moon, and it's Gold Fever with Ken Maynard and Tales of the Diamond K. Right now, enjoy an episode of My Favorite Husband, starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning, as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Family series starring Lucille Ball with Richard Denning as Liz and George Cooper, two people who live together and like it. As we look in on the Coopers tonight, they have company. George's boss, Mr. Atterbury, and his wife, Iris. It's after dinner, and we find the group in the living room. George and Mr. Atterbury are on one side of the room smoking their favorite cigars, while Liz and Iris are on the other side of the room, roasting their favorite friend.
And then Grace pulled one of those famous boners of hers.
She didn't.
She did. Everybody was playing bridge and talking, and all of a sudden there was one of those silences that just happen, you know.
Yes, yes, I know. Get to the meat of it.
Well, the room was quiet as a tomb, and suddenly Grace's voice boomed out and said,
"There's nothing like a good cigar."
You're certainly right.
Quiet, Rudolph. What did Grace say, Liz?
Well, I shouldn't repeat it, but she said...
She didn't.
She did. And that's not all. In trying to cover up, she said...
She didn't.
She did.
What do you think, George? Did she or didn't she?
I don't know, but if Liz says she didn't, she probably did.
Why don't you two just smoke your cigars and be quiet?
Just ignore them, Liz. Tell me, what was she wearing?
What do you think?
No, not again.
She didn't.
She did.
Looks like Grace did it again, Mr. Atterbury. Rudolph, did you hear what happened to poor dear Charlie at the bank yesterday?
No, Joe. Tell me what happened to poor dear Charlie, and don't spare any of the juicy details.
Never mind, you two.
Well, you know that blonde cashier at the bank? Well, everyone knows.
He didn't.
He did.
That will do.
Tell me, George, what was he wearing?
Well, what do you think?
Not that old rag.
That's enough, Rudolph.
Oh, I'm so tired of that gray pinstripe of his, I could scream.
Now, George, maybe it's not Charlie's fault. Maybe he can't get the suit off. Maybe his tailor sewed him into it.
Wake it up, boys.
Well, I don't like to say anything.
I don't like to say anything either, but...
Thank you, Hedda and Lolly.
You two think you're very funny, don't you?
Well, we were just showing you how you sounded. Meow, meow.
I'll get you for this, Rudolph Atterbury.
You know, they're right, Iris.
What?
We must have sounded awfully catty to anyone listening.
Well,
and Iris, there's only one thing for us to do about it.
You're going to stop gossiping?
No, we're going in the den where no one will hear us. Come on, Iris.
Thought they'd never go.
Oh, I'm sleepy, George. I don't think I'll straighten up the living room tonight. Let's just go to bed, huh, honey?
Now, wait a minute, Liz. I want to talk to you.
Oh, can't I wait till morning, dear?
No. It's about gossip, Liz. Those things you were saying about Grace.
Well, I'm too tired to repeat them now, George. Why didn't you listen the first time?
You know I detest gossip in any form.
So do I.
So do you.
Yes, I hate gossip just as much as you do, but it's the only way I can get any dirt.
All right, Liz. If you enjoy indulging in something that's petty, cruel, and malicious, go ahead.
But I don't, George.
Gossip is usually completely untrue. At best, it has the facts all twisted, and it ends up hurting innocent people, sometimes very badly.
Gee, you make it sound so bad.
I mean to.
Well, all right, George, I'm sorry. And I promise you I'll never indulge in any gossip again.
Good girl.
First thing in the morning, I'll call up and cancel my hairdressing appointment.
Now, what does that have to do with gossip?
You don't think women go to beauty parlor to have their hair done, do you?
Well, I was under that impression.
Well, then you don't know Bessie, my beauty operator. She's the Drew Pearson of the mud pack.
Well, Liz... The thing to do is have your hair done, but don't listen to Bessie.
Hmm.
You know, it'll take a little willpower.
Not listening to Bessie doesn't take willpower. It takes earplugs. But I'll do it. Hi, Bessie. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's all right, Honey, it's all right. There, I got everybody loused up today anyway. I lost my appointment book. Oh, come in my booth.
Okay.
Well, how have you been, Miss... Dearie? Long time no see. Now, let me see. What do I give you?
A shave and a haircut.
Oh, yes, of course. My bad memory, you know. Oh, dear. Well, I suppose you know that Mrs. Andrews and her husband are splitting up.
Hold it. I don't want to hear it, Bessie.
What's the matter? You sick or something? Why, you've always been old funnel ears.
Well, my husband convinced me that gossip is vicious, and I promised him I wouldn't listen to any more of it.
Oh, well, then you don't want to hear the real reason why Mrs. Andrews and her husband are splitting up?
No, I don't want to hear it.
Okay.
Don't try to tell me.
I won't.
Now, don't insist.
Well, who's insisting? I didn't open my mouth.
Even if you did insist, I just wouldn't listen. I'd close my ears. I'll bet I wouldn't hear a word. Let's try it.
To tell me you could sit there and not listen when I tell you that the Andrews are splitting up because Mrs. Andrews was upstairs one night and Mr. Andrews threw a party downstairs.
Can't hear a word.
And Mrs. Andrews was a party he threw downstairs.
I didn't hear any of it, the dirty bum. Got anybody else I don't want to hear about?
Yes, you just gotta not hear this one. And I said to her, I said, now look, honey, if it was my husband, I'll tell you what I do. I see you.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Mrs. Cooper.
What?
You.
What color was your hair when you came in here?
Red.
blood. Oh. Well, didn't it used to be black?
Not since I was a child. Why? What happened?
I made you a child again just for tonight.
What? Oh, I'm so sorry, Mrs. Cooper. I dyed your hair black. I got a hold of the wrong box.
Oh, no, you didn't. Bessie, give me a mirror, quick.
Here you are.
Oh, who's that?
You, me. Oh, that awful black hair. Do something, Bessie. Make it red again.
But I don't dare re-dye it for a couple of weeks or it'll all fall out.
Some choice. I can be Black Beauty or old Baldy.
As a matter of fact, Mrs. Cooper, I think you look real good with black hair.
Well, I don't like it. Oh, George, you'll kill me.
Bessie! Oh, Bessie, there you are.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Atterbury.
Oh, hello, Iris. Oh, hello there. Bessie, have you seen Mrs. Cooper? Iris, don't you recognize me?
Oh, of course. Now, don't tell me. I know that black hair. You're Mrs. Middleton's niece.
Iris, remember Liz Cooper?
Oh, yes. I met you at Liz Cooper's house. At the barbecue. Wasn't that the worst meal you ever had?
You stuffed down four steaks all by yourself.
Why, you're Liz Cooper. Oh, no, girl. What a dirty trick, putting on a black wig and tricking people into telling the truth about you.
I wish it were a black wig, Iris. It's mine, all mine.
Oh, how did it happen?
Bessie used the wrong bottle of dye.
She didn't.
She did. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm supposed to meet George for lunch.
Well, now, this is no excuse, but I don't think it looks bad at all. Do you, Mrs. Atterbury?
Once you get used to it, it's rather becoming.
You really think so?
So help me. From a certain angle, you look sort of like that actress, Lucille Ball.
Oh, she's pretty. Do I look like her, Iris?
Nah.
Lucille Ball never saw the day she looked as young as you do.
Well, thank you, I think.
Well, you do look great. Now, go on and meet your husband. Maybe he'll like him.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't even recognize you. I didn't.
Maybe he'll think you're a strange woman flirting with him.
Oh, I can just see George if he thought a strange woman was flirting with him. He'd run a mile. Or would he? Yeah. Would he? I think I'll just sit down and test him out. Hello, George.
Why, hello?
Why, George, I'll bet you don't know me, do you?
No, but what's the difference? Sit down.
What? I'm insulted. Don't you really remember where you met me, sweetie pie?
Oh, you were in the kissing booth at the Club Bazaar last spring. You couldn't change a $20 bill, and we had to use it up.
Guess again, I dare you.
Yeah, your face looks familiar. Oh, you're the girl who danced at the Club Smoker last winter.
What's my face got to do with that?
Oh, I know, sure. I taught you to swim last summer when my wife was out of town.
No, but go on. This is very educational.
Oh, come on. Sit down and tell me who you are.
But aren't you expecting someone?
No one important.
Really?
No, just my wife.
Yeah.
And I know she'll be a half hour late.
You know, I think I've seen you with your wife. Isn't she a gorgeous redhead with a stunning figure?
No, that wasn't my wife. Now, she's short and dumpy.
Well.
Now, you've got what I call a stunning figure, honey.
Oh. And is there anything else you'd like to say?
Yes. Yeah. Where'd you get that black wig, Liz?
Oh!
Oh, sure. What are you doing with that fake black hair?
George, Bessie got the wrong dye by mistake. This is my hair. Does it look too awful?
Well, I feel like I'm married to Prince Valiant.
Great. Well, she can dye it back in a week or so.
No, I'll sweat it out. Come on, let's have lunch.
All right. George, you did know it was me all the time, didn't you?
Why, certainly.
Who was that girl you talked to swim when I was out of town last summer?
Oh, I just made that up.
You made it up pretty fast.
Well, don't you believe me?
Yes, I believe you. But if I ever find a brunette at the club with your fingerprints on her water wings, watch out.
Mrs. Cooper, I just can't believe it's you with that black hair.
Oh, you'll get used to it. It'll only be this color for 2 weeks. Then I'll go back to my natural dyed red. Hello.
Liz, this is Grace.
Oh, hi, Grace. What's up?
And now, Liz, honey, it's none of my business, and I want you to realize I'm only doing this because I'm one of your best friends.
Doing what?
Well, I'm the last person in the world to spread gossip, but...
Hold it. If it's gossip, I don't want to hear it, Grace. I'm not listening to that kind of talk anymore.
Oh, well, that's the way you want it.
That's the way I want it.
Of course, this was about your husband, George.
Well, what are you waiting for? Spill it.
Well, I didn't see it myself, but I got it from Francis, who got it from Gertrude, who saw the whole thing from behind a potted palm.
Saw what?
George was having lunch in the green room today with another woman.
He was?
Yes. A gorgeous creature with black hair.
Is that all you wanted to tell me? Grace, George had lunch with me today.
Yes.
What do you mean? Yes. He did have lunch with me.
Oh, that's a good story, Liz. You just stick to it no matter what anyone says.
But it's true,
sure,
Grace.
Sure, don't worry, Liz. I won't tell anybody. Everybody I was going to tell has already called to tell me about it anyway.
Go stick your big gossipy nose in somebody else's business.
Well, I was only trying to help. Goodbye.
Oh, that makes me so mad.
Well, what is it?
The cats are howling today, Katie. George had lunch with the brunette. This is the biggest news since Ralph Miller's wife found him upstairs with a downstairs maid.
Oh, I wonder who that could be.
Well, if I'm any kind of a handicapper, I'd say it was Grace to win and Millie to place. Hello.
Hello, Liz. This is Millie.
If my girlfriends were horses, I'd make $1,000,000.
What?
Nothing, Millie. What's new, I'm afraid?
Well, honey, it's none of my business, and I'm one of your best friends, but...
Wait a minute. I can save some time. George had lunch with a dark-haired woman at the green room.
Oh, darn that Grace. Well, anyway, Liz, I called to tell you don't have a thing to worry about.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Gertrude saw the whole thing, and she says the woman is old enough to be George's mother.
That does it. Goodbye.
Another one.
Yes, it's not enough they gossip about me. Now they've aged me 30 years.
Oh, no, not another.
Well, let's find out who gets the show money in the Alley Cat Derby. I don't know how they found out so fast, unless someone put it in skywriting. Hello, yes, I've heard it. No, it isn't true, and why don't you mind your own business?
Why, Liz, girl.
Oh, Iris, it's you. I thought it was one of my gossipy friends.
Why, no, Liz, it's me. What's the matter with you?
Well, the girls have been calling me. I suppose you heard that ridiculous rumor.
Yes. And, Liz, I want you to know I'm one of your best friends.
Oh, no. You too, Brutus Atterbury.
Frankly, Liz, I'm a little put out. I'm your closest friend, and every woman in town has scooped me.
Iris, believe me, there's no truth to the whole thing. You, of all people, should know how it started.
I don't know what you mean. That dirty stinker having lunch with a gorgeous young creature.
Don't you dare call George a dirty stinker. What did you say she looked like?
All I know is the girls say she was so good looking she must have been a movie star.
Oh, really?
They said she was absolutely beautiful and had a divine figure.
Well, finally, an honest report. Iris, tell me more.
Well, that's all I know, except that she was wearing a low-cut dress and had long blonde hair.
Why, that dirty stinker.
Honey, I know just how you feel, and if you want to stay with me tonight... What's the matter? Have you snapped your twig?
I'm just laughing at how stupid and twisted gossip can get. George was certainly right.
What do you mean?
You know yourself that Bessie dyed my hair black this morning. I was that woman having lunch with George.
That's the idea, Liz. Just keep saying that. If you believe it, that's all that counts.
Oh, Iris, you're just like all the rest. Goodbye. Oh, Katie, why do women have to act like females?
Men are just as bad.
Well, I'm going to teach Iris a lesson.
Well, what do you mean?
I'm going to start a little rumor about Mr. Atterbury and let Iris see how it can get all twisted up.
Hello?
Oh, Grace, this is Liz. Listen, you know that I'm one of Iris's best friends.
Yes, what's the dirt?
Well, I just heard that last Wednesday afternoon, Mr. Atterbury had a Coke with his secretary in the drugstore.
No.
Yes, and that's not all. One Coke... two straws.
Well, go on. Don't stop now.
Well, I don't have the rest of the story yet, but it's a pip. So don't breathe a word till I call you back.
Oh, I won't. You know me.
That's what I'm counting on. Goodbye.
Mrs. Cooper, that's not much of a rumor, just that Mr. Atterbury and his secretary had a Coke together.
Katie, I only planted the seed. By the time the girls get through cultivating it, it'll be full-grown poison ivy.
Hey, Liz, honey, I'm home.
Oh, George, am I glad to see you. What a day this has been.
What do you mean?
George, today our names have been on more lips than camphor ice. Some busybody saw me having lunch with you and thought it was another woman.
No.
Yes. You should have heard how they got the facts mixed. One report claimed I was beautiful enough to be a movie star. Isn't that funny? Well, it isn't that funny.
Well, I was just agreeing with you.
Well, you didn't have to agree so hard and so fast. George, I'm so disappointed. Even Iris joined in. I got so angry, I started a rumor right back at her about Mr. Atterbury.
What?
Just to teach her a lesson. I told Grace he was seen Wednesday afternoon in the drugstore having a Coke with his secretary. The last person who called to tell me had it changed to Saturday night at the Continental Nightclub with a beautiful blonde.
Liz, what's the matter with you? Do you want to get me fired?
Oh, now, don't worry, George. I just want to show Iris that a rumor that has absolutely no basis in truth can spring up and travel like wildfire.
Now, you call her right now. I'm taking no chances.
Oh, all right. I'll call her. Only I'd like to wait and see what it finally gets twisted into.
Do it right now. Oh, now I wonder who that is.
Oh, probably one of my friends who doesn't have a phone, so she's coming over to tell me the news in person.
Hello, Liz girl. May I come in?
Why, certainly, Mr. Atterbury. What's the matter?
Hello, Mr. Atterbury.
Hello, George boy. I brought my toothbrush and pajamas. I wonder if I can spend the night at your house.
Why, yes, of course.
Iris has locked me out.
Locked you out? Why?
She heard a rumor about me, and she's furious.
Well, goodbye, everybody.
Come back here.
Oh, I've never seen her so angry.
Mr. Atterbury, I think Liz has something to tell you.
Oh, George, now...
Liz?
Well, Mr. Atterbury, I started that rumor.
What? Cooper, you're fired!
What for? What did I do?
You married a nincompoop.
Well, you don't have to be that upset about it, Mr. Atterbury.
Oh, don't I?
Well, I started this innocent rumor, and I can call Iris right now and fix the whole thing.
Well, see if you can fix this. I really was at the Continental Club Saturday night with a beautiful blonde.
Oh, no!
You're listening to The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY, a broadcast from June 10th, 1949, an episode of My Favorite Husband starring Lucille Ball and Richard Denning. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When The Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, Ken Maynard talks about gold fever on Tales of the Diamond K. But first, the planet man orbits the moon on the Golden Age of Radio.
The Planet Man. The Planet Man. This is the fascinating story of Dantro, the Planet Man, troubleshooter for the League of Planets organization, the law enforcement body for peace and justice in the celestial world, whose headquarters and center of operations are situated on the capital of all the planets, Planaria Rex. From Mercury to Pluto, wherever danger threatens the universe, you will find Dantro, the Planet Man, fighting for fair play. In a moment, the Planet Man.
The blood crisis is not yet past. The Defense Department still needs vast supplies of blood and blood plasma. These materials, for which there are no substitutes whatsoever, are saving the lives of our wounded men in military hospitals and of civilians here at home. Every American soldier who is wounded in battle needs the equivalent of 9 pints of blood. So the continuing drain on supplies is obvious. In addition to these current demands, it's absolutely necessary that we set up a national stockpile of plasma to meet any emergency which might arise. We need such a reserve in case the Cold War should lead to an enemy attack on our shores. More than that, every disaster, fire, flood, explosion, or earthquake takes its toll. It takes so little time to give your pint of blood. Simply call your local Red Cross chapter for an appointment. The Red Cross handles the National Blood Program, which aims to supply the total blood needs of the country, civilian and military, current and reserve. Every type of blood is needed, and to meet the demand, Americans are rolling up their sleeves.
When we left the crew of Earth's first rocket expedition, they were heading for a crash on the moon.
we find Dr. Darrow, his daughter Pat, Slats, the engineer, and our two young stowaways, Billy and Jane, discussing their dangerous predicament. The sound of the complicated control mechanism makes the cabin seem like a chatterbox of confusion. And from the outside can be heard the mad whining of the lunar currents. We find them now as they're getting closer and closer to the moon's surface. Slats is speaking.
Our altimeter reading is dropping pretty fast, Professor.
Isn't there any way we can break our fall on the moon?
I've thought of everything, Pat, but there just doesn't seem to be any answer. The extra power we lost on takeoff was our only hope.
Father, I know you don't like to do things second best, but in a situation like this, it might be necessary.
What do you mean, Pat?
Well, what about using our remaining power to go into an orbit around the moon, as we discussed in our original plan?
Yes, but what good will that do? We still come to the same end, except that the agony will be prolonged.
Let's do it, Professor. We got nothing to lose.
Whatever it is, I'm game, Uncle John.
Me too, Uncle John.
You know what they say, Professor. Where there's life, there's hope.
It'll be a ticklish maneuver now since we've gotten into the pull of the moon and our power is limited. But if the rest of you are game, so am I. Stand by to maneuver. Pat, start the reactor.
Yes, Father.
Slats, check the radar rangefinder and make sure you pinpoint those readings on the moon.
Yes, sir.
I'll pilot. Now keep your fingers crossed. Heading 10 degrees starboard.
Heading 10 degrees starboard.
Cut the reactor, Pat.
Cutting reactor.
What's our reading?
It's 63.3. We need a bit more, Professor.
Hit it again, Pat.
Reactor on.
Are we picking it up fast enough, Slats? What's the reading?
Not enough, Professor. We need a fraction more.
Are you sure, Slats? I've got our heading way over, and our power can't last much longer with such a radical course heading. Slats, give me a reading. Slats, do you hear me? Give me a reading.
It's 89.4. Six more points, Professor.
That's the end of our power. I hope we make it.
Steady, steady. Just a bit more, old Ironsides. There. Well, we made it. We made it, Professor.
Good, right on the line.
Oh, we made it, Father.
Hey, what are we all so happy about? We're right in the middle of nowhere.
You mean that we're not going to land on the moon after all?
I'm afraid not, Billy.
What's going to happen?
Nothing, Jane. We're just going to circle the moon the way the moon circles the Earth.
Just look at that view of the moon. What a break. So near and yet so far.
Uncle John, something is happening to the air. It's getting stuffy in the air.
I know, Billy. It's the air circulator slowing down. Breathing will be just a bit difficult from now on since our oxygen supply is limited. Slats, where are you? What are you up to?
I'm outside the ship, bringing up the lunar communications generator. Thought we might as well set it up and try to make contact with the Earth.
You can't do that alone.
I'm here, too.
Careful, Pat. Don't let go now. Pat! Slats, grab her. She's floating away.
What?
Quick, Slats.
Slats, help me. Help me.
Pat, here. Grab my hand. Quick, now. Come on. Hold tight now. Easy. There we are. Steady now.
He pulled her back, Uncle John.
Pat, Slats, is everything all right?
Yes, Father, thanks to Slats. I thought I was a goner.
Don't forget you're out in space, Pat, and if you ever drifted away, we'd never be able to get you back.
It's all okay now, Professor. We're coming in.
Pat?
Yes, Billy?
Jane and I know what's going on.
What are you talking about?
Pat, we know this whole trip was spoiled because we stowed aboard. It's all our fault.
Now listen to me, you two, and stop feeling guilty. It wasn't the best idea for you to sneak aboard, but it did happen. And besides, we could have been wrong in our calculations. The important thing now is for all of us to face up to whatever lies ahead. And I know that you two won't let me down.
Never, Pat.
Not us, Pat.
All right, now let's just forget the whole thing. I wonder where Slats and Father are.
We'll return to Planet Man in just a moment. So, level up! Well, it looks like the first trip from Earth to the Moon is coming to its tragic end. The good ship Constitution is in a hopeless orbit about the Moon. The entire crew is slowly suffocating because the oxygen supply is coming to an end. Professor Darrow and Slats are in the posterior cargo chamber. Slats is apparently up to something.
Why don't you go to the control cabin, Professor, and lie down for a while? It'll be easier for you to breathe.
I think I'd better stay here. I hate to have Pat and the kids see me so worried and worn out. Slats, you've got something on your mind. What is it?
I've been thinking, Professor. I really haven't got anybody. Nobody'd miss me, and you and Pat and the kids have a little extra time.
Now, what are you driving at?
Well, a big guy like me uses a lot of oxygen. All I have to do is to step through that port, and it'll be all over in a second. You people will have a little longer.
Don't be a fool, Slats. We're all in this together. Besides, if anybody goes through the port, it will be me. I'm the oldest. And besides, the whole thing is my responsibility.
Now, look, Professor, I've made up my mind. There's no point in trying to stop me.
No, Slats, don't jump.
Don't stop me, Professor. I'll hit you. I didn't mean to hurt you, Professor, but this is the way it's got to be. So long, Professor. What? What's that?
What's going on in there? What's that clanging?
We're not clanging anything. I thought it was you.
Slats! Father, look out of the port! Quick! Boy, look at that! It's Mammoth!
Professor, get up. Something's happened.
What?
There's something next to our ship.
Huh? Oh, my head. The ship. Here, help me. Let me see the... What? It's impossible. But it looks like another ship is next to ours.
Let me help you, Professor. We must get to the control cabin with the others.
Father, Slats, what is it?
I don't know, but now we'd better stay close together. Slats, where are you going?
Just to get this fishing wrench. I don't know what's coming through that hatch, but I'm not taking any chance.
Well, be careful and don't get too close to the hatch.
Let's all be very quiet.
Stand back, whatever you are. Oops.
Look at Slats. He can't move. He's frozen in his tracks.
Oh, Slats.
Why, it's a man.
What did you expect? A three-headed Mercurian man-eater? I am a man from the planets.
A planet man? Boy, wait till the gang hears about this.
Billy, please.
My name is Dantro, the planet man, and I come in peace. I represent the League of Planets, and my mission is to bring all of you to Planaria Rex.
Planaria Rex? League of Planets?
Where is that?
I'll explain in a moment. But I don't think we should leave your brave friend Slats in this paralyzed predicament. He'll snap right out of it with a shot of this ray gun neutralizer.
What happened? Did I get him?
It's all right, Slats. We're all safe. It seems that we've met a friend. And his name is Dantro, the planet man.
It's nice to meet a brave man like you, Slats. Here, let me help you up.
Dantro, my name is John Darrow. This is my daughter and assistant, Pat.
How do you do?
And I think you've already met Slats.
Yeah.
And these two are Jane and Billy, my niece and nephew.
Well,
it's a pleasure to know you all. You see, we've really known you for a long time, since we've been able to watch your experiments. In fact, we've been in touch with this entire trip of yours. We've even learned to speak your language.
But how could you do all that?
We planet men have many devices which Earth has not yet discovered. And one of them is the cosmic communicator, which enables us to see and hear across the millions of miles of space.
But why have you kept the existence of the League of Planets from the Earth?
Where is Planaria Rex, and why haven't I been able to chart its position?
Everything will be explained to you in due time.
That noise?
It's coming from my ship. We must hurry along. It's the bogey warning oscillator telling us there are some unidentified ships approaching.
But we can't leave the Constitution.
Not old Ironside.
Your ship will be safe in this orbit for 1,000 years. We must not waste time.
Will I get a spacesuit like yours?
Will you let me fly the ship?
I see Earth children are no different from ours. There's our last warning. Quick, through the hatch into my ship, the Planeteer.
What adventures lie ahead for the Earth people? What will they find on Planaria Rex? Whose ships are those approaching the helpless Constitution? We'll be back in just a moment. But first, here is a message that Dantro the Planet Man wants you to hear.
Across the nation, communities and the parents of Boy Scouts are observing Boy Scout Week, agreeing with the boys themselves that adventure, that's scouting.
Tune in again for more transcribed thrills and adventures. Find out what happens to the Earth people as they speed toward a new world on Planaria Rex. Rocket millions of light years into space with Dan Tro, the Planet Man.
The Planet Man.
Hello there, folks. This is Ken Maynard and Tarzan. Inviting you to join us here in the tack room of the Diamond K Ranch for another 15 minutes of adventure. You know, sitting here looking out the window at all the trees and flowers that are changing from green to gold kind of reminds me of autumn, and I guess that's the prettiest time of the year. When I was a boy, folks used to call it Indian summer. The whole countryside was colored like a rainbow. Today kind of reminds me of the Indian summer I spent in Virginia City, Nevada, and some of the strange stories I heard there, like the one I'm going to tell you today. It's called Gold Fever. But before I get started, here's someone with the right short story to tell you.
From the tack room of Ken Maynard's Diamond K Ranch, we're bringing you stories of adventure, stories of circus life, fascinating transcribed tales of the Old West, where cowboys still follow the cattle trails, stories of rodeos and parades, colorful legends of the red man, hidden gold and buried treasure. The exciting tales from the Diamond K are told by Hollywood's champion of Western stars, internationally famous Ken Maynard. Now, while Ken's getting ready to spin another breathtaking yarn, I want to ask you buckaroos a question. Have you ever just held your breath, closed your eyes, and crossed your fingers when you've dropped one of Mother's and Dad's favorite phonograph records? Oh, boy, that's a breathtaking moment, I'll tell you. But now, if you have your very own phonograph records to play, you won't want to borrow your folks, and you won't have to worry about breaking your records if you have a Diamond K record album of stories by Ken Maynard. Here's why. The Diamond K records are unbreakable. Yes, sir. They're made of expensive vinylite that won't break like regular records. And they play so smoothly, it's just like hearing Ken in person right in your own living room. That's why it's so amazing that you can get a whole album of four sides with two tales of the Wild, Wild West for only a dollar. But Ken makes these records for kids, and they're priced for kids. Now, don't forget, buckaroos, Ken will say hello to you personally on the record and call you by name like...
Hello, Jerry. Hello, Tom.
Or whatever your name is, so the album will be especially yours. That's an awful little money for such a big value. So order your Diamond K record album today. Now, here's Ken Maynard with a whopping big adventure story.
Well, sir, folks, it's like I said. It was Indian summer the last time I visited Virginia City. Most of the excitement and glamour had vanished, along with the gold and silver that once had made it Nevada's most colorful mining town. The boardwalks and frame buildings were twisted and warped like cedar trees on a windy hill. I was sitting on the porch steps of the vacant Silver Spur, one of Virginia City's oldest saloons. You could look across the desert for miles, and patches of cactus and the desert brush looked like colored yarn on a Navajo rug. Well, sir, sitting there next to me with his back against the porch rail and his watery blue eyes half closed was an old-timer who'd seen the seasons change for a good many moons. In all my travels, I'd never seen anyone quite like this old desert rat. He'd been ramming on for hours, so I figured he was about to run down, but I was wrong. He just shifted positions and started talking again. Look down there, stranger. The main street didn't used to look like that. No siree. There's more excitement in 1 hour here than you could find in the 4th of July celebration. And let me tell you something else, mister. Gold. Gold everywhere you looked. Why are they even talked of paving the streets with gold? Well, the old-timer took a deep breath and kept right on talking. He said along about the time Virginia City was going full blast, someone started to story that there was a hidden cavern in one of the low hills that contained a king's fortune in gold nuggets. Then there were those who kind of smiled and said it was just a story. It's mighty strange what happens to a man when he gets the gold fever. He kind of loses sight of what's right or wrong. Well, sir, as time went by, the story of the hidden cavern was almost forgotten. No trace of it could be found. Then one summer, a few years later, two young fellows came out to Virginia City from the east, the Winter Brothers, Ollie and Jack. Seems they'd heard snatches of the story about the cavern of gold nuggets. They figured to find a fortune like that was worth a try. They didn't know the first thing about looking for gold, but that didn't bother them any. No siree. They packed up a string of burros and left town early one morning. They headed north, out across that stretch of dry land to the other side of them rocky hills, See him way out there, stranger? He said. I nodded my head, but he didn't even notice. Kept right on talking. Why, he wound himself up tighter than a Big Ben. Well, sir, folks, according to the old-timer story, 6 months went by with no word or sign of the Winter Boys. Then the town folks got to talking. This was exactly what they knew would happen. The boys had got lost or killed. City dudes had no business traipsing around the desert alone looking for gold, they thought. Too bad, but it happened before, and they guessed it would happen again. Then they promptly forgot about it, and life in Virginia City went on just the same. For one evening, just before darkness set in, a lone rider stopped at the general store and ordered grub. He looked like a man we'd traveled far. His clothes were dirty and worn, his weather-beaten face could stand a shave. He didn't say much, just ordered what he wanted, and then paid his bill with gold. Clerk looked at him in surprise and then asked, aren't you one of the Winter Boys supposed to be lost out there in the desert someplace? Why, everybody around here thought that before he could finish his sentence, Ollie Winter had gathered up the grub and was halfway across town headed for the desert. Well, sir, excitement sure broke loose that night, the old-timer said. All you could hear was folks talking about the Winter Boys, how they'd found the hidden cavern and a fortune in gold. And that night, a dozen or so prospectors tried to follow Ollie Winter's trail, but they lost it somewhere in the rocky hills north of the city. And for months, the search continued. Every foot of the desert land for miles was covered, but never a sign of the hidden cavern or the Winter Boys. Well, when the old-timer paused for a moment to sort of get his breath, he looked out toward the hill country, and his tired old eyes lit up like a man who'd found his first goal. Then he chuckled softly to himself as he said, "Stranger, for city fellows, them winters were pretty smart boys. Never come into town only at nighttime, and it was always Ollie that made the trip. Got to know the country mighty well. Sooner or later, a man gets kind of careless, and Ollie was no exception. I reckon he hung around Virginia City just a little too long. But, Dad, blame a stranger. You can't blame a man for wanting a little excitement. And there was plenty going on in them days. Well, the old-timer settled back after that sudden explosion and went on with his story. Seems that Biff Ballin, who owned the Silver Spur Saloon at that time, was mighty interested in finding the hidden cavern. He'd been waiting a long time for Ollie Winters to get a little careless. One day near the end of the fall, Ollie started back for the desert with supplies. Biff was watching from the back room of his saloon and called in a couple of his men and gave them their instructions. They wouldn't have any trouble, he said. It was daylight. It'd be easy to follow the trail. Well, it looked like Ollie had overstayed his visit. Hour after hour, the two men followed the trail through the narrow mountain passes, across desert sands, over high rocky ledges, and finally Ollie led them into a small valley bordered by giant rocks and boulders. And here at the entrance, he pulled his horse to a stop and, taking his handkerchief from his pocket, wiped the dirt and swept from his face. He looked up toward the high ledge, then he heard the shrill whistle of a whippoorwill. His brother had seen the signal and answered it. Ollie rode on through a narrow pass and out into the 4 mile valley, and drew rein and waited. Suddenly he heard the thunderous echo of a .45. He smiled. There was no doubt now his brother Jack had seen his signal and answered it. Now there was a situation. How about it, folks? You enjoying your visit here at the Diamond K? Well, I'll get along with the story in just a minute. But I just want to shoot the breeze about my Diamond K brand for a second. You know, I've had my brand since I first started out in the rodeos, and it's traveled with me all over this country, in Europe with the circus, and to Hollywood for movies, and down in the jungles of Yucatan hunting for lost cities. So naturally, I'm kind of fond of that brand, and I'm proud to know so many of you young folks have joined the Diamond K by wearing a K-shirt like mine. Now, getting back to our story about the hidden cavern of gold nuggets near Virginia City, there I was sitting on the steps of the old Silver Spur Saloon talking to this old-timer. Guess I should say he was doing all the talking. Well, he changed the toothpick to the other side of his mouth without even losing a word. You know, stranger, he said, them Winter Boys are mighty smart boys. There was Jack Winters waiting up there on the ledge, ready to fire on anybody that was following his brother when he got the signal. He took a shot at the two men hired by Biff to follow Ollie, but I reckon he wasn't much of a shot. Just winged one of them in the shoulder, but they sure hightailed back to Virginia City. They had all they wanted of looking for gold. But, stranger, he said, Biff was a smart one, too. He got right down to figuring how he could outsmart the winners, and he came up with a pretty good scheme. Seemed that Biff decided to follow all himself the next time. Wouldn't trust it to any of his men. But he did take Blackie Hedges along with him. That was part of the plan. Well, everything was working out just the way Biff had hoped for. He followed along a couple of miles behind Blackie. Of course, Blackie had no idea what was going to happen. When they got to the small valley, Biff got his field glasses out and made himself comfortable on a big rock where he could watch what was going on. He saw Ollie disappear among the rocks that hid the valley from sight. And a few minutes later, Blackie followed. Then Biff heard the shot and laughed softly to himself. Everything was working out the way he'd planned. The old timer stopped talking for a minute, shook his head in disgust. You know, stranger, he said, I never saw such a dead blame poor shot in all my life. Biff must have waited for half an hour or so, just long enough till he'd figured everything was clear. Then he started up the trail. Sure was pleased with himself. Only a few more miles and he'd have the greatest fortune any man ever dreamed of. Well, sir, the old timer continued, I can't recollect if it was 1 or 2 weeks later, a horse came loping into Virginia City and the man on it looked like he was about dead from starvation, thirst, and burning sun. Yep, it was Biff, all right, gone plumb loco. Just before he died, he jabbered something about finding tons and tons of gold. Then he spilled his sack of yellow rock on the ground. The folks stood there looking first at Biff, then at the yellow rocks. You know something, stranger? Some people go plumb loco when they see that yellow stuff. Reckon that's what happened to Biff. Funner part of it was, though, it turned out to be fool's gold. No flies on them winter boys. They salted the cave with fool's gold to throw folks off the track in case they did get too close to the real treasure. The old-timer got up from the porch and stretched his tired old legs. Then he said to me, Reckon I'll just mosey along now. I called to him as he started down the street. Say, what's your name, old-timer? He stopped, looked at me for a minute, and then he chuckled. Winters. Ollie Winters, mister.
Boy, say, there's an adventure story for you, and I enjoyed every minute of it. Now, here's Ken to tell you about his next exciting story.
Next time we meet, I'll tell you the story I call Pirate Booty. So till then, this is Ken Maynard and Tarzan, closing the door of the Diamond K Ranch Tack Room.
You've been listening to Tales from the Diamond K, told by Ken Maynard, internationally famous cowboy and Hollywood's champion of Western stars. Tales from the Diamond K was transcribed and produced in Hollywood.
We hope you enjoyed two classic radio programs featuring Ken Maynard with Tales of the Diamond K and the thrilling adventures of the Planet Man. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.